Welcome to the Accelerating Operational Performance Podcast. I'm your host again, Greg Schenkel, President of Unique Training and Development, Frontline Leadership Systems. And of course, our mandate here at the podcast is just help you get better at your current role, position you for future promotion, help you accelerate any projects that you're working on, and generally get more done with less stress. And our podcast, this episode, is brought to you by our new Site Leader Development Program, or SLDP. This is a program for plant managers on increasing their effectiveness. What we've been noticing for some of our clients is that plant managers and everybody else in the organization is always swarming down to help the business run on a daily basis, when really what should happen is through greater empowerment and accountability, we free up the more senior leaders to do higher value tasks and help their businesses improve and grow. So, of course, you can reach out to us at uniquedevelopment.com for more information. I'm excited about our guest today. Actually, our guest is James Coolidge. And James and I were involved in the same community service organization for many years. I was a donor to a social agency that he was part of. And now he's in the HR consulting realm, in the leadership development realm. So he and I have had some great conversations, and I thought it would be great to bring him onto the podcast. So let me do a proper introduction. Our guest today is James Coolidge. He's a senior director at Aria Consulting, and he's a purpose-driven leader and certified executive coach with over 30 years of experience guiding organizations and individuals through change, growth, and transformation. His career has spanned national nonprofits, social enterprises, and consulting, where he's helped scale missions, stabilize leadership through interim executive roles, and led organizations through complex transitions, including mergers and acquisitions. James specializes in supporting boards, executives, and their teams how to confidently navigate leadership development, talent strategy, and uncertainty. James, it's great to have you join us on the podcast.
Thank you, Greg. It's great to be here.
I think the first thing is I want people to get a sense of the journey that you've had in moving into the role that you have at Aria, which I think is, by the way, tremendous. I know I talked to you before you were, or just at the point where you're making a career transition. And I think this is like the ideal role, but give people an idea of some of the stepping stones on your journey to where you're at right now.
Yeah, for sure. Well, as you know, I spent most of my time doing nonprofit work in some of the social enterprises, some of the social impact in communities, and really enjoyed that time of providing leadership and scalability of the impact that these organizations could have. However, during the pandemic is where I realized that there just seemed to be a challenge of leaders and how leaders showed up in that space during the pandemic responses. And now for us and our organization, we did a whole transition. We pulled in other nonprofits to keep them all sustainable in that space and continue to make that community impact and support individuals within the City of London, both families and homes and youth. However, I saw some nonprofits struggle. And then I looked at business, the people that supported our organization. Some were thriving during that time. Others shut down and they never reopened after the pandemic response. And I was kind of curious at that point, why? How do we shift and move forward? How do some of the businesses move forward? And why does so many also shut down and really struggle during that time? And then I got curious of, I don't know what I don't know. And so it was actually at that point that I decided to go back to university. I went to Guelph University, to Lang School of Business. I worked on my Master of Arts in Leadership, more to find out what is the frameworks that maybe myself and other leaders were using during that time. Is it possible to train and empower leaders to lead through uncertainty? And how do we do that when leading through uncertainty means I don't know what's happening, what its source is, what the future is, and how to respond in that immediate? And so, yeah, so that's where I actually focused my research. I'm doing my final thesis there. And today I look to just bring that to leaders to help them work through and navigate uncertainty.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a great, first of all, it's a great story and a great approach. And I know you're very mission driven just yourself as a human being. One of the things that prompted me to ask you to be a guest was I saw that you had been doing a session recently, a webinar from Aria on sort of resiliency in the face of uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we're recording this, a lot of businesses in both Canada, the United States, and quite frankly, around the world are dealing with tariff uncertainty or the shifting landscape and you know, businesses don't know whether their supply chain needs to shift, whether customers are going to still do business with them. And I think a lot of leaders, like leaders love, probably like most of us, love certainty. And yet we're in a period of time when there's a very low amount of certainty, and then you're supposed to provide leadership to people. And I just wondered, what's your take on that? What are you advising people to do and think differently about?
A big part of that is reframing. How do we shift our focus? So you're right. In linear thinking and systems thinking, if an organization or a manufacturing plant has a certain way of doing it, A plus B will always get a C, to simplify it. When all of a sudden B is removed, how do I get to C? And the challenge comes here, the longer you're in a linear way of processing and creating more efficiencies and effectiveness to enhance the business and maybe scale up the production, but still using the same systems, that linear thinking, the moment the environment shifts, it's very hard for leaders to shift out of that systems thinking. We've already formed mental models. We've created a space where I know what is true and should get me this result, but I'm not getting the result anymore. And how do I think differently? And that's the problem, that the cognitive flexibility, it's really hard to be flexible with our thinking about thinking and that system two thinking, because we're so used to just, I naturally do it. I know what to do. And our limbic system in the point of stress completes the narrative, but it doesn't work. And then we get frustrated. So now who do I blame? I'm going to blame the workers. I'm going to blame the supply chain. I'm going to blame the executive, the senior leaders that aren't listening to me. I'm going to find someone to blame because I'm doing what I know should work. And it doesn't. And so our amygdala kicks in, which is that part where we've got high emotions and memories of what should be working. We begin completing the story, but yet the story isn't true because we don't know what we don't know at this point. And that's where my encouragement, that space for leaders initially, is you got to slow down. You got to stop going with what the gut tells you and I know how to react to this. You don't, because this is new environment. So we need to get curious. And to get curious, I first have to slow down and begin to challenge some of those mental models to then begin to explore in the whole area of sense making of what's actually happening. And that sense making is a whole different process that allows for innovation and emergent practices.
Right. So one of the things that we talk about in our frontline leadership program, and it was in this program we've just recently wrapped up for plant managers, is we say that emotion almost always trumps logic. So I like how you brought the amygdala in terms of that part. And it's interesting that you said sense making, because really what you're also talking about is something that the story I'm telling myself is. One tip for people is to maybe even articulate that in words, even if you're just by yourself and talking to yourself. It's like, the story I'm telling myself about this is X. And then ask yourself whether that story, which is just an interpretation of some possible fact or circumstance, it is just a story that you're creating, and it's this framework that's feeding back into that loop. That doesn't make it true. It's just your story. And so if you shift the story and say, what is an alternative story I could tell myself about that, that in of itself may be enabling, I guess, from a resiliency standpoint. Mm-hmm. So, when I think of some of the stressors on people other than the tariff uncertainty and things in the supply chain, the next thing that comes up, and I do want to step back and say, like you, I've had a 30 plus year career. I've been in this business for 3 decades. I'd say there's always been this sense of disruption going on. And every time I hear people say we're going through unprecedented change, I go, I don't know about unprecedented. I just think that through all of, especially industry and organizational development, it's been a constant rolling stream. I realize that it seems more fast, and it probably is more fast and furious these days. So the other thing I think people are worried about is, I don't know, automation, artificial intelligence, just the adoption of new technologies in a competitive environment. So what are some other ways that people could process those kinds of, I guess, dilemmas that they might be facing?
And that's a great question. And it's funny, as you talk about unprecedented, it's unprecedented when it happens to me. when I see it in someone else, like, well, that's natural. You should have expected that. It's happening now to me. This is unprecedented. And it starts too, I think, in that space where leaders, we tell ourselves that we need to know. We need to have the answer. And that's actually not what we're paid to do. It's to actually explore and discover. And that involves our team and the diversity of our team. So another part of our brain, as we're in our amygdala, the other part is the reticular activating system, which is right close to the stem cell of the brain. And it is what allows senses in and out. And so therefore, for example, I recently bought a truck and it had on, which I didn't realize, I did all the basic things. It was a Ford Maverick and yeah, it drives nice, it handles nice, has all the features I need for safety. As I'm driving it 2 weeks later, I flipped on the visor and it says, make sure your seatbelts are fastened due to rollover risk. Rollover risk, what? And I flipped it and I said, see on the other side. I never even thought of a rollover risk. I've never had a vehicle with that kind of a warning before. And a reticular activating system lets us see what we're familiar of seeing and what we need to process, but keeps out any of those sensors that could overstimulate us and overwhelm us. Otherwise, we'd be sitting in a fetal position in a corner by all the different sights and sounds that we don't realize our brain's not processing. In times of uncertainty, our reticular activating system doesn't know how AI is going to impact. We might hear a story of how it's impacted someone else, but how do we actually show up in that curious spot? Who can I bring to the table that has experience in these areas that can share with me information of a knowledgeable perspective of the benefits and possible risks? And then how do we navigate that? And then that's where we go into environmental scanning, which isn't about my opinion of the environment, but about who do I need to pull to the table that will challenge some of my assumptions, that will enlarge my view, my perspective, and begin introducing me to new concepts that I need to be introduced to so that my brain can begin to see it and begin to respond to it. And so again, our brains are phenomenal pieces of our body. And we think, I know how to control my brain. It's like, well, that's actually your brain telling you that. So let's remember the same source that's saying I can control my thoughts. I'm not an emotional responder. It's like, well, that's you telling you.
Yeah.
Be open, be curious, getting that feedback and building in the diversity of the team and then other peers that are navigating the same waters with you.
Yeah, I think even though, I mean, the whole thing, like we only use 10% of our brains, I think that's been busted. But I think you're making a good point, which is reticular activation is really, you only get to see a small field of view, and it's basically your brain protecting you from overstimulation, as you're saying. So that's good. That's probably why we think we're only using 10% of our brain. The brain is very busy in the background looking at all sorts of things. The other comment I'd make is that this idea of who, not how, is like, this is a concept that was in a recent book by Dan Sullivan, who created Strategic Coach. And he's a prolific thought leader, I think, around these things. And he says, you know, whenever you feel stuck or you're having trouble with the how to deal with something, really you should be asking who can help me deal with this and just opening yourself up. So like you said, under periods of stress and uncertainty, we tend to narrow our point of view.
Yes.
And that's just exactly when you need to do the opposite. So I guess one of the tricks, and maybe you can expand on it, is when somebody is just I like to say, like stay curious, not furious. And I'm thinking, but I still have the judging part of my brain that posits a thought. It's only after I know that this is going on that I can go into curious mode. And I didn't know whether you've uncovered some other things that people can do, because I'm not sure you can stop some of the things that are automatic, but more recognize them when they're occurring or something. Is that what you'd suggest?
Well, one thing that, again, research is showing is the value of mindfulness. And so as leaders can actually take time, and some say, yeah, that's all that hocus pocus stuff of breathing and closing my eyes and imagine. Research actually shows that leaders that are able to do that are able to actually spend more time in that systems two thinking, where we're thinking about thinking. We're actually using the executive function of our brain as opposed to the reactive, I know what needs to be done part of our brain. And so mindfulness practices, groundedness, I mean, there's the five senses where you, like, what are five things I see? What are four things I hear? What are three things I smell? What are two things I can touch? What's one thing I can taste? Like, just slowing down in mindfulness where you get grounded in the present begins to free up. The other is acknowledging emotions. What emotions are showing up in that space? And acknowledging them. And people say, well, I don't make emotional decisions. Well, if that's true, then you actually can't make a decision. Because a decision is in favor of, emotional favor of, or emotional favor resisting.
Agreed.
So every decision is emotionally based. And so for leaders just to acknowledge, emotions also though get in the way of that strategic thinking, because there could be something personally going on in your life, and that's showing up at the workplace. And that's where you talk about emotional intelligence, but there's also emotional maturity.
Yeah.
Am I actually elevating the emotions that I'm feeling in this space? And so there's those parts of just calming yourself down, grounding yourself, and reminding yourself, well, I don't know, it doesn't mean danger. Well, I don't know, it doesn't mean we're in trouble. It could also mean, and if I take time to think about it, what are the opportunities that are emerging right now? Yeah. What are the ways that we can maybe scale up? We might have to shift focus, but what else could happen in that space? And how would it actually become even more profitable or more productive for our team, for our communities, or wherever our focus is, when we allow ourselves to shift from the unknown isn't bad, it could actually be really good and a great opportunity to reinvent.
Right. I think, you know, one of our guests on the podcast before, and one of our colleagues, and I've just recently wrapped up a project with him, Jason McKenzie, is really big into appreciative inquiry. But one of the things that he struck me with, and he was teaching some plant managers this technique, is the idea of taking a problem, flipping it, which just automatically, it's just easy, just the opposite of it. Mm-hmm. So, and then elevating it, which is what you're saying, is that the thing that's presenting as a danger, if you take a moment to just think about the flip side of it and what you might elevate it to in terms of opportunity, it might be a tremendous way of taking the organization to another level. And I think most people listening to this podcast have had their own experiences where a change that they thought was going to be particularly difficult and horrific actually ended up being a great leaping and jumping off point to something that really was a breakthrough for them. And I think, again, it's remembering those things, or at least considering them within the realm of possibilities in terms of what might happen. So this idea of mindfulness, the other thing I guess, James, that I would bring up is that we're noticing that the urgency, and you know, the urgency and importance, and you can do the Eisenhower matrix, it's like the urgency of always having to solve the problem right now, today, and swarming down instead of realizing that there's people whose job it is to take care of the day-to-day problems. And we have to elevate ourselves up so that we can keep a clear mind to look a little further ahead. And that comes down to empowerment and accountability, which, just as a side benefit, also increases engagement and performance. Yes. So I love how you're taking like this holistic view from a leadership level to help people break out of the fear and move forward. I was wondering, with your resiliency webinar that you did, is there some other elements to it that you thought are helpful for leaders in this reframing mindset?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the challenges sort of in that space, and we do know, again, in times of stress, there's actually very few leaders that can actually leverage the higher level of executive function. They hold the capacity, so they have the solution within themselves. They have the experiences, they have the skills, they have the knowledge, but they don't know how to get into that systems two thinking where they can process it. And that's where getting an appropriately trained executive coach, because there's a lot of people that can do like the 8-hour one day seminar and they're now an executive coach.
Yeah.
Watch out for those folks. but ones that actually explore and know how to ask inquiry open questions,
right,
which allows the leader to get into that executive function space out of the stress point. And into that place where they can actually begin to leverage some of their experiences, or who they need to talk to, or who else on their team they could invite in to create some of that debate challenge as they really try to work through strategic decisions and moving forward. Environmental scanning isn't just about the leader. It's about at all levels. What are people seeing? And then is there the psychological safety for those folks to actually share up? Because the other thing I find sometimes, people are fearful to share their observation because of reprisal. Because they might miss an opportunity if they actually speak out. They could be accurate, they might not be accurate. And the question isn't, are they challenging the leader? It's what their observation is and providing feedback up. But if they don't feel safe to, they'll withhold it. And in the end, that can cost a lot of money to the company. Or if they actually see an environmental shift happening in the external or internal, but and they don't share it, again, could be catastrophic for the organization. So when we hire people, they are our team, not just to do the production of the work that we're looking for, but also how do they proactively and preemptively maybe find something that might be happening further up the line that if we fix it ahead of time, could save us hours of repair in the long term. So
thank you for that. Yeah. Now, by the way, you're so well versed in this. I do want to backtrack for the sake of any audience members who are going, what's a system two thinking? So Daniel Kahneman, well-known economist, wrote a book called Thinking Fast and Slow. So system one thinking is the sort of gut moment or gut to feeling, reactive type thinking. Systems two thinking is where you kind of think through things, pros and cons. And so that's what you're really saying about that pausing, because the fear triggers the system one thinking, which is fight and flight and doesn't always give you the reaction. So I just wanted to explain that for folks.
That's
and
great.
I actually, while you were talking, I was thinking, who is the author of that book? Yes, Nobel Award winner. Now, the second thing you mentioned, which you kind of just kind of threw in there, psychological safety, it's a concept. Actually, Google did some research on high-performing teams versus low-performing teams and said strong group norms and psychological safety. So if a leader has people on their team who are not feeling psychologically safe to speak their mind, to ask a question, to volunteer a solution, I mean, there's two things at play there. There's the leader's feeling and the vibe that they're giving off to their team as far as whether they're open to it. There's the team member's sense of security. I just wonder, like, what tips would you give a leader to help strengthen the psychological safety of their team? Because it is absolutely critical and something most leaders probably don't even think about.
A few things come to mind. One, people respond to authenticity. So as a leader, if you show up authentic and with some vulnerability that you don't know all the answers and that maybe you could be wrong, maybe you didn't train and onboard effectively, maybe you didn't clarify what you're looking for, so that they can ask those questions back. I think sometimes we can get tired in our busyness that we don't have time for, and people can sense that. If a leader doesn't have time for me, then obviously I could lose my job if I ask too many questions, so I'm not going to ask the questions. Then it gets wrong and it messes up a lot of other things. So psychological safety is where the individual does feel safe to question, to challenge, to push back if they feel that it's not going to achieve the outcome that the leader is anticipating them to be able to produce. And they feel the safety and freedom to do that. And the leader might still say, thank you for bringing that to my attention. I still want you to do it this way.
Yeah.
Okay, at least you felt safe to do it. And when it blows up, the leader doesn't go, why did that blow up? This is your fault. No, leader, maybe it was, again, the system that you told them to do, which doesn't work in a shifted environment, but we didn't get curious about why that person was pushing back, because it always worked in the past, but for some reason, it's not working now in the future. And so that psychological safety is important for the person to feel, again, that sense of locus of control, that I do have a say in the outcome, and therefore that intrinsic motivation, I'm internally motivated to accomplish this goal because I am seen, I am heard, I am valued for what I bring to the table, my skills, my experience, and my knowledge, and the leader trusts me to achieve that outcome as well. And when you have that kind of engagement from a psychologically safe workplace, from a leader, you get way better productivity, and you also hear about the problems before they occur, probably even with a solution or two to consider, some different options to consider from a different perspective, which I think every leader would appreciate, than simply having a person say, it doesn't work. That's not helpful.
Yeah. So, making definitive statements always invites some degree of conflict and disagreement. By the way, the study that reveals things like strong group norms and psychological safety in the Google environment was called, I think it was Charles Duhigg who wrote the book, The Power of Habit, but he wrote a special article for the New York Times on what Google learned in its quest to build the perfect team or something like that. It was 2016, and revealed that it wasn't the things like the all-star team and the most experienced or the people that went out for, you know, socialized after work and that sort of thing. It was really down to norms, psychological safety, and a few other key factors. So maybe tell our audience, what is the work that you do through ARIA? Who are the kinds of organizations who engage you? And what steps do people go through if they were going to engage you or ARIA in some sort of a project or a need?
Yeah. I mean, we really kind of customize to what the pain point is that the organization's experiencing. So, if it's an HR regulatory issue or concerns that maybe our policies aren't up to date, for example, at a sort of base entry, that would be one way that they would engage us. It could be in the area of executive coaching that there are certain people that performance is not aligning, and/or they don't know what's getting in their way, and they're feeling stuck as a leader in a changing environment, and they're not sure how to navigate going forward. One of the areas I specifically work with are leaders that are being outplaced. And so we are seeing a lot of downsizing happen throughout Ontario and Canada. My specific focus is more in the southwestern Ontario area. And with us helping leaders reinvent themselves as well in that space, because when you've been working for maybe 30 plus years and all of a sudden you're being downsized, it's kind of like, now what's my next? And so helping people, again, work through that process for themselves and their own personal business plan and what that looks like going forward. And so just a variety of ways, but shooting me an email or a phone call, it always starts with a discovery call to look at what's the specific need, what's getting in the way, and then how could we help, or here's some other resources they could turn to.
That's awesome. I wanted to ask you just one follow-up question to that. Knowing how emotional it can be at the time when you're restructured or your position is restructured, and this frame of reference that you've had of success for a certain thing is now completely upended, there's a lot of emotion behind that that people are dealing with. How do you just, even in the early stages of your engagement with them, just help them through that, I guess, grieving process so that they can start to think about possibilities? Any quick things you could share with us about that early stage of moving from the grief of losing your job to the opportunity of getting onto something new?
That's a great question. And the first thing I do is I literally just hold space. People need to talk it out, but not talk it out from a person that's going to be just simply validating, but just allowing them to talk it out and ask questions about what's showing up and what that means. A lot of times people in that space, they feel like they've lost their value and their purpose. Their identity is gone because my identity is so rooted in my what I do, and they forget the who. And so I try to get them from the do to the who and remind them that when that organization terminated the employment relationship, because they're not going to pay you anymore, so you're not a volunteer, so you're probably not going to produce that work anymore, they lost the value that you bring. And helping them from there, once they sort of get through that sort of grieving and understand, I still have my value. I have all the experiences. I'm the one that brought the knowledge in that space or grew my knowledge in that space. I'm the one that developed my skills or have those skills. Those go with me. And now, what does that look like as I package that up into my value proposition statements? How do I review all the different accomplishments and see the different pieces that I actually am capable of doing? And what are the other marketplaces that that could apply to? Once people get into the who and see their sort of value propositions, literally doors open up. And it's, I do feel again, it's that reticular activating system is holding them back from seeing the broader marketplace of what they would actually be very excited when they bring all of that and align it to their personal values, align it to their personal mission and their passion. And they just think, well, that's not possible. It's like, it is possible. And so again, as we help work through coaching by asking questions, what's getting in the way? How could you reframe that? What would happen if that became possible? What would happen if that was true? People's energy shifts, and the more positive they become about their future and about the opportunities, they do see those opportunities and they land those jobs. And that's kind of the exciting thing in seeing.
So one of the things, James, having known you, is it's great that you've gone for this extra training because it just, I see how it even allows you to unlock many of the things that you've always felt and you had values towards. So that's been impressive. You've already shared so much wisdom. I wasn't sure if there's any last things you wanted to share with our audience before we conclude the podcast.
I think that the biggest thing is really, if you don't know who you are, anchor into your authentic you and who your ideal self is. And when that ideal self is not showing up in situations of your leadership, take some time to reflect and ask questions why. What's showing up for me? And how do I want to show up differently in those conversations so that I can be curious, so I don't miss any opportunities that are emerging around me because my ego or my fear is getting in the way. And in doing so, we begin to sort of the three areas is we get to regulate uncertainty, we get to enhance people's ability to take risk, And we're able to begin seeing the dynamic capabilities that we have that we can leverage in these changing uncertain times. And those three, I would say, are the three key things that we're trying to do through environmental uncertainty or immediate change that's happening. How do I regulate uncertainty? How do I normalize that? How do I enhance people's capacity for risk? And how do we leverage the dynamic capabilities that exist in our team to still achieve or maybe create something new in our organization going forward?
This is awesome. I told James before we started rolling the podcast that my daughter Rebecca, who had served with James in this social agency or club that we were part of, how much she wanted him to say hello, and he of course reciprocated. But that just is an example of the kind of lasting legacy that James has on people. So James, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Again, if you want to reach out to James or the folks at ARIA Consulting, you can do that at ARIA.ca. And you can always connect with James on LinkedIn. James Coolidge has been our guest. James, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you so much, Greg. It was a pleasure to be here.
And thank you as an audience member. Boy, there was enough to unpack there with James. And I know some of you will be really thinking about what is the story I'm telling myself about some of these situations. So again, hopefully we gave you some interesting tools, a little bit of a different episode for us in helping you unlock your potential and therefore unlocking the potential of your team by challenging some of your own thinking and approaches to see if it will unlock greater success with your team. So all I want to do, of course, is say if you need any of our leadership assistance, you can reach out to us. It always starts out, like James said, with a discovery call or a conversation, and that's easy to book through our website at uniquedevelopment.com. For now, let me just wish you all the best on your leadership journey. Until next time, take care.